this is Tony Lloyd. Being a broadcaster for many years, I've witnessed some great stories in the music industry, and now I want to bring as many music stories to you as I can in this series of podcasts. My goal is that they will inspire others making their way in the music world.
Music Stories with Tony Lloyd.
Welcome to Music Stories, Sam, Shelley and Kira from the band Joan of Arc. Welcome, ladies. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Very good.
Fantastic. It's so good to see three of you in one interview. That's fantastic. And you're all looking good and very rocky and what have you. So you're obviously from an all-girl rock band. You've got an album out now. Called Invisible Enemy, that's it, and a new track that you just released called Here I Go, which I've listened to today, and it's awesome. I turned it up in the studio and nearly blew the speakers.
Oh, thank you.
It's really good.
Be careful with your speakers, though.
I will. Yeah, they're quite expensive ones, actually. So, So what I want to know is how it all started for you guys. You know, how did you get into music and how did you meet and so on? So fire away, whoever you want.
Started in 2004, actually.
Ah, wow.
Because me and Shelley were, me and Shelley are sisters, and we were in another band called The Suffragettes. And we had a deal with Sony, actually, with the Suffragettes. Mm. And then there was a lot of band politics going on. That kind of broke up. And then we formed Joan of Arc after that, okay, in 2004. And we were originally just a trio. So it was me, Shelley, and the drummer, Debbie, who's not here at the moment. Mm-hmm. And, we did that for years. And the lineup sort of changed over the years, but we've gigged and toured everywhere, Japan, America, all around Europe.
Wow.
Done everything, really. that's how it started.
That's just awesome. And so that's how you all met. I mean, but how did you get into music? Were you sort of, did you learn music at school or did you?
It was our dad, me and Shelley's dad plays guitar. So he played and he taught us first, and then we got lessons and went to music college, and we just got a musical family.
Mm. Same with Kira as well.
My dad was a drummer for what would be classed as a new wave of British heavy metal, a band called Raven. He started with that band, and he's been working with bands most of his life. He's been in function bands, he's done work for musicals, and he's also got a current band that he's in at the moment, which he mainly does as a hobby because he's got a job at Hull City Council.
He was a tour manager, he was part of Roadproof for a few bands.
So really, it was all bound to happen, wasn't it? Because, you know, you've all been involved with music from day one, really, with your parents and your siblings.
Yeah,
and stuff.
We had jam sessions on a Friday night when we were kids, when we were growing up, and all our family would come round, and we'd have our uncle play the piano and our other uncle play the bass and my dad play guitar, my cousins singing. And that we didn't watch telly, we just jammed every Friday night.
Like music.
Is it? Do you think it's an advantage to have family members in a band, or is it a disadvantage as far as getting on is concerned, and so on?
Critique. Well, they're your biggest critics.
Definitely.
So,
but I think what also is useful with having musicians in the band is they would be really happy. They help if you want to be a musician yourself, they help motivate you with that. Mm. And both my parents have been exceedingly supportive with what I've been doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important.
Yeah.
And how family history goes back a long way, because my uncle was in a band, were in a few bands, and he supported the Barren Knights, and he supported lots of big bands in the 60s. So he was signed himself and he went touring. And so we've got a lot of advice from, family members that have done it since the 60s.
They're like, you can't do this and you shouldn't do that and you mustn't do that.
Yeah.
And watch out for
When we got our first record deal as well, they were very sceptical. You know, you've got to get this lawyer, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. You don't want to get done over by this. And
Yeah.
So it's great at the same time having that advice.
And of course, you can trust them because they're family members.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, tell me.
But they're critical.
Well, well, I suppose it's better to know how it is.
Okay. Yes, no, it is.
You don't really want them to say, oh, yes, it's lovely. Yes, yes, carry on. you need to know, don't you?
You see, our fathers would always say, and Kira's dad as well, you know, we would come off stage, we'd think we did a good gig, and then, you know, our musician dads would say, that was the worst gig I've ever been to. Yeah, and
You need to work on that.
That wasn't right.
I would say it's more constructive than
Oh, dear. What did you do? Did he belt him one or something when he said that? Oh, dear. So you mentioned that you've been touring all over the world and everything else. Now, what's your happiest memory in which country?
Go on, Shelley.
It was the Hollywood LA in the Sunset Boulevard show.
Oh, wow.
We toured with a metal band called Huntress in America, but it was playing at the Viper Rooms, the Johnny Depp's club, and it was just the whole fact of you were behind these curtains, and you didn't know whether there was going to be a big audience or not, and it was like, it was almost like a variety act. It was really weird. And then this guy come on Compare. And he said, all the way from London, England, John. It was like that. It was really dramatic. And then these curtains opened, and they were so enthusiastic, the crowd. It was just, that's a different, it was totally different in America, a different vibe. And Kira's been there herself and played.
Yeah.
It was an exciting time for us.
The Americans are very enthusiastic.
Yes, they do clap a lot, don't they? And cheer and stuff. Yeah. It's just fab. That's what you need, really. You know, I mean, there's nothing worse than doing something to an audience and everybody's looking glum and then going, yeah.
That's like a British crowd.
Yes.
Yeah, the British crowd. Yeah. Like,
always get the one person going like that. And then you find out they actually enjoyed the game. Really?
There's always one. And then they do actually end up enjoying it. Yeah, there's always one. When I used to do mobile discos before I was a broadcaster, which is going back a very long time to my teens, you'd always get somebody, you know, you'd read the audience and you get them dancing as best you could to the music that most of them like to dance to. And then you'd always get, you know, so they might be dancing to ABBA or something like the Dancing Queen, which everybody dances to, don't they, anyway. And then you get somebody saying, have you got any punk, mate? Like that, you know. And you go, no, I seem to have left my punk collection at home. Because, you know, if you put on any punk music or anything similar, then everybody would leave, you know, and that's not the idea.
No.
So, yeah, I understand where you're coming from. Okay. So describe this new track. What's the inspiration behind it and how did it come about?
It's to do with, heartbreak, really.
Oh, no.
But then, like, picking yourself up and being strong and being positive and just moving forward in that positive way, becoming stronger after being hurt.
Yeah, which you have to do, really. Otherwise, you just go downhill. Don't you?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. And was this based on any personal occurrence?
Yeah. It was a long time ago. It was a song that me and Shelley wrote together. We wrote a lot of songs together. That's the main thing we did. We were the main writers. And then, it was a personal experience. And Shelley would usually write the music. I'd write the lyrics and sort of merge it together, really.
Oh, that's good. That's a bit like Elton John and Bernie Taupin, you know, so one does the music.
That's it, yeah. And then the wonderful Kira came along and gave us some bass magic. So she's created some incredible bass lines on the album.
And a couple of her own tracks.
And wrote her own songs, yeah.
Well, where's your inspiration, Kira?
Well, probably... kind of different to Samantha and Shelley's influence. I mean, I have a eclectic mix of styles of music that I really like. I mean, it goes all the way from like extreme metal all the way to Motown.
So I do in my every time. I mean, I can. I mean, mostly the kind of music I like is much heavier and a lot more darker. I'm into the industrial music and kind of avant-garde music. But also, I really like music that has a groove and gets you dancing. So I love funk. I love soul. And I also like that 70s rock, which has those really interesting bass lines, like Andy Fraser from Free, Boswell from Bad Company. They don't just do very simple bass lines. And with my songwriting, I tend to go into more darker topics, especially with the two tracks that I wrote for this album. But it also just shows a different style rather than just straightforward hard rock.
Yeah. So it's probably a good idea, isn't it? So there's something for everybody on the album.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I can understand that. Any love songs?
Yep. No.
On the album, we do have a few heartbreak songs on there.
Right.
Nothing Left to Say is the last track on the album. We'll have to send you the full. Have you got the full album?
I haven't. No, I can download
I'll
it.
I'll send you the full album.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. That's great.
Yeah, the last track is Heartbreak, actually. Nothing Left to Say.
Can you sign it? Can you sign it as well, please?
Yeah, I'll send you a signed CD.
Look who I got signed one from the other day.
Lovely.
Betty Boo, we'll sing, she's on the podcast as well. So.
I will send you a signed CD.
Thank you. That would be treasured.
And you will hear you'll actually hear a few love songs towards the end.
Okay.
And we've got it features the Francesca Cole. She's a wonderful cellist. Cello player. She's fantastic. So they're actually softer songs on the end of the album. So you never know, there might be one there that
It's the tempo really. So
actually the slower songs towards the end of the album, you've got a few heartbreak songs on there. There is a couple of rock ballads. But
Shelley wrote one called Rain on Mondays that she sings on. She does the lead singing on, and it's fabulous tune actually. And that was about heartbreak as well. And that's a big sort of epic rock ballad.
Mm. Excellent. Okay. That's fantastic. I the reason I ask about love songs is because my radio show Love from Tony is all slow romantic music. People like to listen. People like to listen to it, so it makes them fall asleep.
I like it. I really love sleeping.
Which isn't the idea, really. But every now and again, I put a fast one in to wake them up again. I'm so cruel. But there you go. Okay, so that's really good. That we know of has influenced your music and your writing. You mentioned Kira. You mentioned a whole broad range of different genre of music. But as a band, who do you think is the biggest influencer rock wise?
Well, we all have really different inspirations. Really, I love Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin, the vocal side of it. I really take inspiration from his vocal. Mm-hmm. So I would often be quite experimental with my vocal and, try not just sing the lower end, but try and really experiment with the higher end of my voice as well. So he's been a big inspiration for me. And like Shelley's like massive on Queen, aren't you, Shelley?
Shelley's.
I love Brian May.
There you go.
His guitar playing. I love his guitar playing.
Shelley's just fallen asleep. She's
it's
listening
a guitar
to a love
that
song.
Sings to me. It's just wonderful.
The guitar
playing.
Yeah, I thought we lost you there.
Brian. I've seen Brian May play a few times.
Yeah,
seen
amazing.
Him on his candlelight tour with Kerry Ellis. And I've also seen him at Westminster Hall with Queen, with Adam Lambert as well. And I love Queen.
I've seen that concert. It's awesome, isn't it? And he's just the best. It's hard to say the best guitarist, but one of the world's best guitarists, I think.
He is to me because he's so unique in the way he plays. He plays with a penny. He doesn't even play with a plectrum. His sound is just so. It's just like a voice, isn't it?
Yeah. So, he makes it sing.
He makes the guitar sing.
Okay, brilliant. So your album Invisible Enemy, what's behind the title?
Okay, so this was a lot of it was written in the COVID time, the lockdown period. Invisible Enemy being just everything that the virus itself, but just everything around it. It was actually sort of the negative side of it, you know, of the whole lockdown, just everything that came with it, like loneliness and isolation. There's a track on there called Isolation, actually, and that's all about being the time I was living sort of in Bedfordshire in the middle of nowhere in a flat alone, and I didn't see anybody. And so a lot of people, there's two ways of looking at this. Some people wallowed in their misery and stayed indoors, and then other people started doing things to get them out of this. I'm stuck indoors, I'm isolated. So like I started running in isolation. I started songwriting, and I wrote about all of these things that were happening to me. And not seeing, we didn't see family because our family were in Norfolk and Sam lives in the Midlands. So we just didn't see anyone. Well, I didn't for months on end.
Difficult times.
So we wrote songs and then we emailed them to each other and we added parts. So Kira added parts and Sam sent me some songs, and we just did sort of demos, but via email.
We did it all online.
That's amazing, isn't it, with the modern technology these days? So you each record your own track to the song, and then it gets added on into the mix.
Yeah.
I think the one thing I won't miss about it is when we wanted to rehearse the songs.
Yeah.
So when they started lifting the restrictions and a group of people could go, you know, into a studio and rehearse, etc. We had to do it strictly online. And the problem when you're trying to do it via Zoom is there's this sort of delay.
There is.
When you're performing together, one sounds really out of time and you may stop and think, oh, I'm out of time, and you try to lock in.
Yeah.
And it just, but unfortunately that was the only way we could do it. So you just had to grin and bear that it was so out of time with the delays and stuff. So you had to just do what you could do.
Yeah.
But we managed to get a lot done, and we managed to literally write a whole album. It took us 2 years because of the lockdown period, because we weren't allowed in the studio. Then we were, then we weren't. And so we had to sort of, after we got the demos together, keep going back in the studio to do a couple of songs, come out again. And we were all living in different parts of the country. Again, we had county restrictions as well, and all sorts going on. And someone said, God, I can't believe it took you 2 years. And I said, well, I can, because we were restricted.
It did. Well, I suppose at least something positive came out of the lockdown for you guys, you know, because you came out with this brilliant album. So
we couldn't believe the response after we'd released it, because we weren't going to release this album, and we just decided to go ahead. And then we've had so much great response from it, because it's because when you put time and effort into something and you don't rush it, you take the time, the quality comes out at the end.
Yeah.
When you want to rush something and you say, I want this done in 3 months, bands and artists have this issue with, I've got to release it now, it's got to be done now. But actually, some of the greatest albums took years to produce or record.
Yeah.
If you look at Dark Side of the Moon, or you look at Rumours, or any of these big albums, they weren't quick. They didn't happen within 3 months. So they may have happened within a couple of years. So that's what I think is quality is better, putting time and effort into something, so you produce quality instead of it just being quick. And
yeah, I understand.
Yeah, that's my opinion on
that. I think that's good advice. If you can, I suppose, you know, people need to release stuff quickly for financial reasons, maybe, so, you know, they have a higher turnover. But I understand what you're saying about quality. What other advice would you give to bands listening to this interview who are struggling and trying to get somewhere in the music industry? What advice?
I think for me, the main thing that I've learned along the way is that you're going to get lots of like managers and labels saying, you need to be like this, you need to be like that. The most important thing is to be true to yourself. and not try to be something you're not, because in the end, people, you know, the general public will see through that, and they will be more passionate about you if they can see it's actually coming from your heart and it's real. That's what people love. They love you being real, really. Even though record labels or managers might say, oh, you need to do this and you need to be the latest Kings of Leon, or you need to be the latest Oasis or something like that. You know, you need to be like this band or that band. No, be yourself, be different, because you're going to have a longer career doing that, even though it might be hard, it might be a bit of a struggle, it might take longer, it's worth it.
And and another piece of advice which goes along to his, which ties in with Sam's advice, is make sure you get a music lawyer. If you get a contract sent to you by anybody, you either get a music lawyer or you join the musicians union and you get a professional to look at it. Because so many bands and so many artists make the mistake of signing something that they've not read and they don't understand. And it might sound great. But you look at Taylor Swift now, she's re-recorded or 6 albums or 5 albums, and that's because
she signed them all away.
She just gave it all away. So what I'm saying is, even the biggest artists out there that you see out there have sort of made mistakes when they were younger.
I suppose if you're just starting out and somebody says, I'll sign you, and people go, wow, you never guess what, you know, I've got a record deal or whatever, I'll just sign it. I'll sign anything because I'm so grateful and so excited, and they don't.
And then the great example.
And
then the great thing now, like, we've got a generation of people that do see through the illusion of the music industry and don't go in there very naive and ignorant. I think it's so important that you get the reality check of how hard the industry is and what the business is like. And you must not let people walk all over you or try to take something from you or take advantage of you in a business sense. And I mean, like, I'm looking at like songs that are so well known, and yet this person who wrote it or this artist who wrote it didn't see a penny.
No, I've heard that. I've been on tour in Europe. I've met some soul artists from, you know, stories of, you know, they're very old now, and they said they wrote particular songs back in the 50s and they never ever got a penny for it.
And that's
what used to happen. But now, you know, someone like Taylor Swift is now actually doing a lot for the music industry, because now she's saying, look, the artists can have their ownership over their own work and they can release through their own label. As long as you've got the right pluggers in place, you always need to have the pluggers in place.
You do, indeed, a good plugger.
Because the plugger and the agents do a fantastic job.
They do.
You have to pay them, but they do a damn good job, and they get your music out there and promote it. And that's the thing. You can do it on your own now. You don't have to rely on the middleman anymore.
No.
But you do have to invest time and money into it.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure it's quality.
Yeah. Great advice. Fantastic advice. So the future for you guys, I guess, you know, by the sounds of it, that you're all so busy that you do this full time and you don't work in Primark on Saturday.
We don't work in Primark on Saturday. We all have jobs within music. So we do... We do musical jobs, but they are only musical, and we put our time and effort into our recording and releasing our music. We did have a few band member changes after lockdown. A couple of the band members decided they wanted to do something else.
Sure.
So me, Kira, and Sam have just kept it going, we're still releasing this. Because we're three of us are just passionate musicians.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I can tell by talking to you on this interview. It's amazing. It's great. How about gigs and touring in the future? What have you got lined up?
Yeah, so three of us all do a lot of session work for different artists. So we're out performing all the time with different artists. For us, we had a break. So what we did was we said, after the band members sort of doing their own things, we said, okay, we're just going to release this album, and it's going to be a lockdown album. It's going to be for the ears only. And next year we are going to look at sort of promoting what we've done here and writing a fourth album as well. We're going to look into doing that. So we will tour as Joan of Arc next year live. We will look into doing that. But I think with the three of us, we've just, I think after lockdown, we kind of needed a break from it. Just release the album. It's a bit unusual releasing an album without touring it, because most bands do. But I think we've all been through quite a fair bit over the last couple of years. And
yeah, you need a holiday.
It was very mentally draining. Very mentally draining.
Yeah, exactly. You need a holiday. Come and see me in France.
Sounds lovely. Sounds incredible.
No problem. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today and for your time and everything. I wish you best for the future. And especially with Here I Go, which I love, your new track that you just released.
Thank you.
Good luck with all that. And keep in touch with me, okay, because I'd like to, you know, to follow you with interest and see what's next and over the next few years, how you get on and what have you. That'd be really nice.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, girls. Thank you. Music Stories is a free podcast with no fees paid to contributors, in the hope that it'll help and inspire others in the music industry. Get in touch if you've got a story to tell. If you would like a professional podcast made or would like training so you can do it yourself, I can help. Go to tonylloydradio.com.
Music Stories with Tony Lloyd.